Women have had the right to vote in the U.S. for a century, after a long and difficult battle that spanned generations. Barbara Berenson is the author of Massachusetts and the Women's Suffrage Movement, Revolutionary Reformers. The core of the book is an argument that Bay State suffragists have been given short shrift by history, and that their efforts were on the bleeding edge of a national struggle. Berenson spoke to WAMC about her book and the overlap between suffragists and abolitionists ahead of her September 17th talk at Williams College.
My book really discusses the battle for the vote that began in Massachusetts during the anti-slavery movement in the 1830s. And I pretty much conclude, although of course the story is not over, with the ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920.
So what was the overlap between abolitionists and people pushing for the women's vote?
So the overlap is huge because the women's rights movement grew directly out of the abolitionist or anti-slavery movement. What happened was when the nation's abolitionist movement began in the 1830s, and Boston was the leading center of that movement, there were a number of women who were very sympathetic to the anti-slavery movement and very much wanted to join. And they began speaking out against slavery. And they were told that they had no right to do so because women were supposed to remain in the domestic sphere, the sphere of home, taking care of husband, children, family, and so forth. And women pushed back, and they claimed that they had a right to speak out and care about public issues. And that really is the genesis of the women's rights movement. Over time, over the next 10 to 20 years, the focus became the vote. But the whole movement began directly from the anti-slavery movement.
So you just touched on this, but what was that community like in Massachusetts at the time, with people pushing for what at the time were very radical cultural shifts in how political equity was distributed?
Yes. Well, the abolitionist movement was a radical movement to begin with, because even though the North had, of course, ended slavery many years earlier, the North benefited tremendously economically from slavery. All those famous textile factories that we talk about and so forth, of course, were making fortunes for wealthy people in Massachusetts and providing jobs for many others by turning, for example, slave-grown cotton into cloth. So the abolitionists were radical to begin with, and then the abolitionists that welcomed women to join them in the movement, people like William Lloyd Garrison, were radical in the extreme. And a number of women, though, were drawn to that movement, began speaking out against slavery, began writing against slavery, began holding conventions of anti-slavery women. And it's those activities that led to a formal women's rights movement.
So, of course, the vote was ultimately achieved. Women received the right to vote. What did that momentum go into next after that monumental achievement was accomplished?
In 1920? Well, it went into several things. First of all, of course, there were women who remained disenfranchised after 1920. Most importantly, African-American women in the South who no sooner achieved the right to vote than were stripped of the right to vote by the same Jim Crow laws that stripped African-American men in the South of the right to vote. So immediately there was concern about that, although that didn't really take off and become a major issue for many people, particularly in the North, until the 1960s. But the lack of voting rights for African Americans was an issue, obviously, from 1920 onward. In addition, energy of women became poured into issue of how to improve women's lives. And so the Equal Rights Amendment, for example, was first introduced in the 1920s. So there was concern about, now that women finally had access to the ballot box, what would their priorities be and how would they use it?